Hello and welcome back to the Balanced Garden podcast with me, Tiger Lily Raphael. I'm afraid more time has lapsed since the last episode than I'd hoped, but this year I really am aiming to put out an episode every equinox and solstice at least. And this episode, Equal Light, is a very special one to me, as it marks the spring equinox, which falls on March the 19th, and that is also the date my mother passed away last year. So I wanted to dedicate this episode to her, as she always encouraged and inspired me to make things, as she was always making many, many beautiful things whenever and however she could. And I'd also like to dedicate this episode to any of you who have also lost a loved one this last year, and to them. Spring equinox marks the astronomical start of the season in the Northern Hemisphere and the start of the autumn in the Southern Hemisphere as the sun crosses the celestial equator from south to north. On the equinox, everywhere on Earth rotates at a right angle to the planet's day-night shadow line, making it the only time of the year when the sun rises precisely due east and sets exactly in the west, resulting in an equal amount of day and night and light and darkness for both hemispheres. In the north and south poles, the sun doesn't set on equinox but moves along the horizon horizontally. Everywhere else, it sets faster on equinox than on any other day. So, as we reach this moment of equilibrium on our planet's trajectory, what does this mean for us? In the Northern Hemisphere, of course, it means more solar energy, more light and more heat will be starting to reach us, more plants and animals will start to re-emerge, and perhaps so will we. As Balanced Garden founder Jasmine Pitti Pradhan reminds us, as ever, our energy is naturally inclined to align with this rhythm if we allow it to. And it can be a difficult transition into spring. Bodies can struggle to acclimatise to the constant heating and cooling, and people can often become ill as it takes a while to adjust to the fresh and enlivening energy of spring, even as we rejoice to see the snowdrops and the daffodils, to open our windows and spend more time outside. So to help us into the new season and integrate its new growth and fresh starts, Jasmine will be running her Embodied Earth Spring Solstice Celebration and Ceremony on Wednesday the 20th of March. Join us in tending to the seeds that we wish to see blossoming throughout summer and beyond. In this deep dive workshop, you can expect slow flowing and restorative yoga to get the lymph and energy moving, a guided meditation and ritual for reconnecting ourselves as we take a sacred pause in the wheel of the year to reorient and harmonise ourselves with the rhythms of nature and the planet that we're a part of. Embodied Earth, a spring solstice celebration and ceremony, will take place with Jasmine Pitti Pradhan online from 7:30 to 9:30 on Wednesday the 20th of March, with a replay available for 7 days if you can't join live. Tickets are £14 with concessions available on request and 25% going to the Palestinian Children's Charity. To book yourself in, head to balancedgarden.co.uk. Next, joining me in conversation is Mikkel the Energy, an artist and spiritual coach whose creations include the dance meditation Cheza Rojo, which uses music, movement, rhythm and breath for spiritual healing and health by transforming anger, untapped energy, fear and trauma, tension and stress into passion, love, pleasure and peace.
I'm an artist first and foremost. That's always been my thing. And I've always been someone who, on my report card, has too much energy and is too hyperactive. You know, I'm the typical millennial kid, you know what I'm saying? And as a music artist, I became frustrated, not just with my musical career or path, but more to do with how music felt like it was limiting my expression. Like, I wasn't able at every time. So I would rap, and then I found that the music was blocking my ability to express more. So then I would produce and rap, which allowed me to create bigger songs and songs with more instrumentation, which allowed me to feel a lot more. And then I found that the song limitations, i.e. the minutes attached to the song, this is the format that I came to know as normal, creating music, didn't sit right with me. And then, long story short, I was living in Kenya for 3 years and going through a very dark time personally. I say dark, but it's more transformative. It's dark because it was more unknown what I was going through. My first time living in the motherland, my first time really living by myself. And so it was a lot of firsts, and it revealed a lot to me. My entire framework of my identity was kind of thrown out, you know. And within that, I had to relook at all the things that make me me. And one of them things was this skill that I have for music, or my love for music, became my healing modality. I started to see it and witness it as a healing modality, as not just, and not just something I did to be a performer or an entertainer. And that was the first time I was really able to see it practically, making music and just experiencing what I was creating and how it was coming through me was actually my healing process. And in that time, because, you know, I'm heavily involved in African culture and, you know, I study history and stuff, I realized, oh, this is not new. Every African, at least, uses music and dance for spiritual health. And that revelation called me to really want to share that and deepen my wisdom that was coming through me at the time. So that's how it came about to me. Cheza Roho is Swahili. Again, I was living in the motherland and learning Swahili and experiencing that, and it was the perfect description for what I was experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. And so it became something I wanted to share with everyone, to remind us the natural ways we go to healing, as opposed to these kind of textbook paths that we, you know what I'm saying?
And like very
therapy and wellness. Yeah, like I used to have to sit in rooms like this for therapy when I was a teenager, because I was too angry, or I was too, you know, thing, you know? And so Cheza Roho is like the opposite of this. It's like outside, it's in nature, it's your pure expression, it's what's coming through you naturally.
For some people, sitting in a room talking, going into their thoughts might be what they need, especially.
And as a coach, I do that with people.
And it's to go into the internal stuff. But if you think like depression, like the word to press in.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're coming out with all the energy and also just to acknowledge that, you know, that it was a criticism, like as a young person, that was too much energy.
Yeah, that's followed me my whole life.
And that's madness. Like, you know, I've got a little boy and he's like a little
explosion.
Yeah, constantly. So, you know, you need ways to get that out.
Mm-hmm.
And so it makes complete sense, that this has evolved as your way to do it. How does, what does it translate as? I didn't.
Cheza Roho.
Yeah,
it means to play the spirit.
To play the spirit.
Yeah.
And so you talk about that a lot, playing the game.
Yeah, exactly.
The spiritual game. Yeah, exactly. So I didn't realize that was a direct reference to the word. And so you put events on, you bring people into a space.
Mm-hmm.
You put you're the soundtrack.
Yes, I'm the master of ceremony.
You're the master of ceremony.
You know, and again, Cheza Roho gave life to what my real gift is. You know, I'm an MC and a rapper and all of these things, but what I try to make people realize is that before the music industry, music existed.
Mm.
Before X Factor, singing existed. Before Hollywood, acting existed. So these things, these qualities that have now found industries, represent spiritual gifts,
mm-hmm.
and therefore spiritual power.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'm really about reminding people of, not even as an alternative, just as a foundation, you know, for reminding people of what these performative arts gifts are actually for, and it's for spiritual evolution and upliftment and expression. And so we've missed, a lot of us have missed that, you know, with our gifts, that it's for us first.
Mm.
It's for us to get to work out certain things with ourselves. Mm. It's for us to get certain things through us. It's for us to channel certain understanding. It's for us to be a conduit to certain wisdom, you know. And then it's business. Do you get it? You know. Yeah.
Before it can be a commodity, it's it starts, way back. I mean, humans were singing before they were talking, right?
Exactly.
And
because, you know, we feel the more closer you are to your nature is the more empowered you're going to feel with yourself.
Yeah.
The more you know who you are outside of your phone or your job or your laptop, you're going to feel more empowered just being. And
yeah,
that's really important for spiritual health, which is something I'm big on.
Mm. And that word empowered. So the other thing that really interests me about your work, mm-hmm, is I feel that there's been a lot of change and leadership from women when it comes to empowered feminism.
Mm-hmm.
I worry that that's left a void in terms of what empowered masculinity is now.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if, you know, if essentially feminism is about taking down patriarchy, like without patriarchy, where does that leave, you know, masculinity or ideas,
yeah,
of masculinity,
yeah,
which were so linked to patriarchy? And I think into that void, some quite toxic, harmful ideas around masculinity,
yeah,
come through, and I worry about, you know, young people especially.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just feel there's this real need for, you know, leadership from men in terms of new ways of expressing,
yeah,
masculinity.
Yeah.
I'm reading, I mean, when you have a toddler, you don't. Reading becomes,
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah,
a huge novelty. But for about a year, I've been reading All About Love by Bell Hooks.
Okay.
And one of the things she says, she talks about the Peter Pan syndrome,
mm,
and about this new generation of American men who had experienced the feminist cultural revolution, many of them raised in homes where fathers were not present.
Mm-hmm.
They were more than happy when feminist thinkers told them that they did not need to be macho men.
Mm-hmm.
But the,
mm-hmm,
only alternative to, mm, not turning into a conventional macho man was to not become a man
at all. Oh, God.
And remain a boy.
Ooh.
So
is that what it says in that book?
That's
a chilling revelation.
She quotes that, I think, from
true.
Another book,
yeah,
from
true.
The Peter Pan Syndrome,
wow,
which she talks about.
Yeah.
And I see
that's
this
deep.
A lot. I
that's
see this
deep.
In our generation especially. But I would like to hear really your thoughts on some of the possible alternatives to the conventional macho masculinity, or what it means to you.
Yeah, so for me, I never look at, like, an alternative per se, like a direct opposite. It's more like, what is it outside of the definition? Because at the end of the day, someone takes the sun and defines it and makes it a light bulb and turns it into electricity, right? So you've got a raw resource,
mm,
and someone with an idea,
mm,
says, I want to harness it in a way that will benefit me.
Yeah.
So essentially, men are born with unique qualities specific to them, right? Just as women are. I look at what are these qualities,
mm,
intrinsically,
mm,
like before we define them and, mm, say these are blue qualities.
Yeah,
do you get it?
Yeah, yeah.
Or these are trouser qualities. Do you get it?
Yeah.
Take that away. What are they? Like, just on a raw, from a raw note.
Yeah.
What is masculinity in nature?
Mm.
And this is what I do often, because me as a man talking about masculinity or talking about femininity or man and women, cause for a triggering conversation.
Mm.
So what I do is I take it to nature. What is masculine and feminine in nature? How does it behave?
Because,
mm, then that will give us a clear indication to how we personally approach masculinity, not just as men, but as whole beings.
Yeah,
because it took masculine and feminine to make you and masculine and feminine to make me. You see? Now, I am what they call divine masculine because I'm a man. So in the family setup, I play the masculine role and you play the feminine role. But in my day-to-day practice, what does masculinity look like in terms of how I am supposed to project myself in out there in the world. And so, again, I look at just the raw nature of masculinity. And when you look at that, masculinity is about discipline. It's about focus. It's about positive projection. You see, it's about consistency. It's about uprightness. You see, and those are the, it's masculinity is represented by the number one, and femininity by the number zero. And again, those qualities and behaviors are represented by what I just mentioned there. And so every man's approach to that particular aspect of themselves could be different, you know. It's not every man, for example, who's is going to be in the gym and care about his muscles like that. Or every man is not a natural capitalist. Do you know what I mean? Or someone who's really eager to win in terms of monetary value and stuff like that. Some men are artists. Some men are adventurers. You know what I'm saying? Some men are builders. And so, but masculinity can really appear in all of these different facets. And so the idea is that even when I teach it, it's never good to put one blanket idea on it, but rather look at it as a raw resource.
Like these are the qualities.
Yeah, like what gets the best out of men on their spiritual journey? And it is that somewhere to focus, somewhere to be disciplined, moral uprightness. You know, it's very important that we have an awareness of morality and uprightness that we get to defend and protect within ourselves, you see? Because these things make up a huge part of our spiritual journey.
Yeah.
A woman naturally is more intuitive because of her internal mechanisms. You see, nature's always calling the woman to develop much quicker, you see? Whereas a man, he develops by his physical interaction with the world and what he learns from being put down and getting back up.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? That conquering aspect of a man is a very big part of how he becomes more aware of himself and what he's able to do. However, that's not always fighting. That's, you get it? It's different. You get what I'm saying? It's just about having that space that he's responsible for and he has to answer to. And so these are some of the things that I cite as very important pillars of masculinity. Which you can find in nature and not just with one particular kind of man.
And yeah, just to be clear, of course, women also have masculine.
Of course, and that's the point.
And men have feminine sides. Exactly. And so this is relevant to everyone.
Exactly.
Whatever the gender.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big question, so I appreciate you sharing.
Yeah.
Your thoughts on it. And I don't know, is there anything more to say about the way Chazaroho and these ideas around masculinity interact?
Yeah, so, the basis of my spiritual health work is centered around the spiritual principle known as Ma'at. Ma'at is a African word that means truth. And it represents an ancient spiritual system for observing nature's spiritual behavior. We call it Ma'at, or in Africa, East Africa, is pronounced Ma'a, yes? And essentially, Ma'a, you would have seen her, if you look at ancient Egypt, you would see her as the goddess, deity with wings and a feather, holding a scale with a heart on one side and a feather on the other side. That represents a spiritual system that allows us to understand the layers to our spirit. So here we are as flesh, human flesh. That system helps us understand directly how we're connected to what we call God and actually how that function works very practically. You see, and so Chazaroho is directly linked to helping people open themselves up to Ma'at, which is really about truth, harmony, balance, order, reciprocity, propriety in yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is that once each individual dedicates themselves to becoming Ma'at or Ma'ashin in themselves, then that's how you effectively create harmony in the entire world. So Chesaroho is an exercise for the game we play in life. Because my art and the spiritual laws that represent my art is, once you observe them, it's like playing a game. You know, the idea that when you start a game, you're given a particular character. That character has particular strengths, weaknesses, it has a backstory, and you kind of just enter the game right there, you see? And you've got to deal with all the challenges, the triumphs, the victories, and the, you know, the levels of the game. You've got to deal with it yourself, and that's essentially how we all come here. You came here, you've got a family, and your parents have got a whole backstory and a lineage and a culture, and some of that you don't discover till 20 years down the line. You're like, what, this whole time? Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that's the game you've been given. You were given your gender as a part of your game, your culture, your the way you live, how you grew up, the you know, where you landed in terms of the system of siblings.
Yeah.
For example, yeah, all make up a part of your game, because it becomes your resource for how you see and navigate the world. And what Ma'at, spiritual law really shows is that that is there specifically for a purpose. All of that has been curated for you to experience life the way you're experiencing it, and the for the sole purpose, and this is the number one reason why it's called a game, is because this for the sole purpose of enjoying life. You know, my art teaches us that we're here to enjoy life. That's the number one reason why we're alive, to enjoy. You know, and if you jump into science and you look at the 500 million to one chance of you being born, right?
Yeah.
The fact that you're here, you've already won a very, very intricate game.
Just to get in the game.
Just to get in
the game. That's a win.
Do you get what I'm saying? You know, it's a like paying to play.
Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah.
So essentially, us being here right now in flesh and being able to connect like this is represents a victory, you know? And despite the challenges we seek, we're here to enjoy the game. Like any game, it's hard. Any game is difficult. You get frustrated. But you never forget that you're playing a game.
Yeah.
So sometimes you can pause.
Yeah.
Relax.
Yeah.
And think about it. And studying spiritual law is like being able to read the manual to the game. Understanding how the play is meant to go. And what are the levels you want to aspire to. And so it puts you, it takes you into the controller level rather than being just the character being moved. Because if you think about a game, the character, do you ever think that the character doesn't actually know that someone's controlling it?
No, it's not. It's not a sentient being. It's not. It's being controlled. It's a artificial world.
And this
world
is it. So the basis of my spiritual coaching, which reflects the teachings of Ma'at, is that you can go from just being the character to sitting in the awareness of the controller through consciousness. So you can know that you are just the character and therefore live your life, aka play your game as the controller.
Yeah.
You see, and so what that does essentially and very practically is life doesn't offend you as much. You become more joyful in the experiences you have, irrespective of this positive or negative, because you see it as a game. You're not so offended by this body. And you neither do you limit your awareness to just this body. You realize this is just your system for navigating this game.
Yeah.
You see? And so that is the spiritual goal is what my art teaches is to live in this body, but as the console. You get it?
Yeah.
And that's when you really get to enjoy. Because any game that Nintendo creates, Nintendo itself knows that this is just a game. Mario is really getting fire on his ass. But Nintendo itself is like, this is a wonderful game.
Yeah.
And so the goal, the spiritual goal is to live as Tiger Lily, the character, with the awareness of the console.
Yeah.
And that is what will lighten up and create a beautiful life, which is what we're here for.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I know we've not got long. And there was one other thing I wanted to talk about, and I'm going to pull a little tangent from that.
Mm-hmm.
Because you also, I love what you, how you talk about love and romance. Where it comes to romance and the game, in terms of being just like thrown from, you know, from one side of the ocean to the other,
I know,
on your wave of
yeah,
feelings,
oh my
and emotions,
gosh, it's not easy.
And emotions,
yeah.
Completely forgetting that, you know, the controls,
yeah,
the controller.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
sorry.
You know, it's a, you know, it's a definition that I think is we really lack in our mainstream culture, that love and romance might be different things, that different kinds of love might be different things. The Greeks, again, they had 8 words for love, all different types of love. And you talk about romance being essentially pleasure and therefore by necessity not something that lasts.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you want to go out and you want to cultivate a lasting love and not get sucked into the game of romance, you got to, I guess, know what it is that your intention is. And to know what your intention is, it helps to have a clear definition. And you talk about it, you describe it as the process of giving, what you become in the process of giving.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
So, essentially, that is the definition, what I talked about earlier, ma'at. The definition of ma'at. Ma'at is what we strive to become as beings, and she also represents part of the system of laws that make us up. So ma'at is the representation of love, and the definition is giving, seeking nothing in return.
Mm.
Right? In fact, on the point of masculine and feminine,
mm.
love in this context actually has a masculine and a feminine quality. Remembering that masculine is not man and feminine is not woman,
mm-hmm.
but qualities that make us whole.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Definitely. The masculine definition of love is giving, seeking nothing in return. The feminine definition of love is the emotional expression of oneness. Now, the feminine one is what we're used to, more familiar with.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the carnal feeling we get when we get hugs, when we're having sex, or when we're eating warm food, or when we're in amongst a group of people that really are in alignment with us and we connect with. But we've forgotten our role in that.
What the action is.
Remember I told you masculinity is about, you see, feminine is about receptivity, right?
Mm.
Masculinity is about projection.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something that you're doing.
Mm.
What we've forgotten in this society is our role in the love process, in the experience, the emotional experience and expression of oneness, that feeling we get.
Yeah.
We have there's something we must be doing to upkeep that.
Yeah.
And this is why we only get snippets of that kind of love.
Mm.
And it often goes away.
Yeah.
Because our role as a society and as a culture, we're not fulfilling, which is giving, seeking nothing in return.
Yeah.
Now, immediately, one would think, well, what if I give and give and give and give until I have no more? The idea is that what you are to give has nothing to do with material, per se.
Mm.
It starts with all the faculties of energy that you have, i.e. your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
You, everyone, no matter where you are in society, you give a thought.
Yeah.
Every day.
Yeah.
You give an action.
Yeah.
You give an intention.
Mm-hmm.
You give an interaction.
Mm-hmm.
Every single one of us gives a practice. We practice.
Mm-hmm.
And we participate. These are the areas in which we project love, whether we are aware of it or not. You see, when you wake up in the morning, the thoughts you are having, the actions you are taking, the interactions you are, you control all of them.
Yeah.
You see? And that becomes your love service to life and the world.
Yeah.
Ma'at says that we are to, in terms of our love and love making as a spiritual concept, not just a physical act,
mm-hmm.
we have to take care of all of that. Those qualities, our thoughts, our actions, our interactions, our practice, mm-hmm. our participation. If you become masterful and deeply religious about how you use your thoughts and your actions and intention and practice, that you will begin to witness life and the rhythms and patterns and the series and sequences of events
mm-hmm.
that come to you through random mm-hmm. circumstance. You'll see that all of them start to reflect what it is that you give every single day.
That's reciprocity.
Exactly, and that is my act.
Yeah.
Essentially, that's why you give seeking nothing in return, because by that principle, everything you give, you have already received it.
Yeah.
You see?
Yeah.
And you cannot give anything you don't have.
Yeah.
You see? So it's the idea that is take full, again, going back to the game, take full responsibility, control your character.
Exactly.
Don't be Mario and try play Luigi. Do you get what I'm saying? Don't be Donkey Kong and try play Diddy Kong. Be Mario. Control what he's doing, take full care and intention of what he is doing, and everything that you are supposed to get in reflection of what you're doing,
yeah.
you receive. It's
yeah.
natural law.
Yeah.
And so that, and now pairing that against romance, mm-hmm. romance is seeking.
Mm.
Yes? Seeking above all intention blindly that passion and desire, that feeling, seeking out feeling
mm.
of pleasure.
Yeah.
And it's like a lottery.
Mm.
You win some, you lose some.
It happens to you.
You guess.
Yeah.
Do you get what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so this way, when you look at love in that way, it becomes a much more sustainable practice.
Yeah.
Rather than am I going to get lucky tonight? Or am I going to get lucky this year? Meet the man or woman of my dreams.
Yeah.
Do you get what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think that conventional definition that you fall in love, that it's out of your hands, it's not your responsibility, it happens to you, and then when it's gone, that's the end.
Love is a practice.
It's a practice, it's a choice, it's what you do. And I love that you bring ideas of how you do that,
yeah.
how you go into the world, what you bring,
yeah.
how you can enact it. Because there's no just like, say someone, oh, just do love. It's like, well, what do you mean?
Yeah,
you know, these are practical ideas.
Exactly.
So thank you.
And that's really important for me.
Yeah.
Because it's like, one of my things is like, the esoteric must become exoteric.
Mm.
If we're really to really actually
live
out the promise of heaven on earth or paradise, like we've been given this world, and it's actually quite beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
It's actually a lot of good stuff here.
Yeah, we actually need to look after it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think just a bit more tweaks in how we see ourselves, I think we could just have a really good time, which is why we're here. You know what I mean?
To enjoy life.
Exactly. So yeah. Thank you,
Miguel. I've loved this conversation.
Yeah, me too.
Really appreciate you coming. So. And you gotta go.
Yeah, and love and respect.
Yeah, you too.
Peace, guys.
Follow Mikkel's journey and find his events at Mikkel the Energy on Instagram or through the links in the blogcast. The ancient goddess Ma'at represents truth, justice and balance in the cosmic order. Worship of Ma'at can be traced back to around 3000 BCE. In the Egyptian creation story, she sailed with her father, Ra, on his celestial sailing boat as he came from the waters with the other Egyptian gods and goddesses. She transformed chaos into creation, creating order in the universe. And her principles of morality and integrity formed the foundation of ancient Egyptian society and culture. Ma'at's principles of leadership, philosophy, and law were believed to be responsible for keeping order in the cycle of the seasons, astronomical events, relationships, the behavior of people, and positive characteristics of men, and the afterlife. In Osiris's judgment halls of the dead, the hearts of the deceased would be weighed on her scales against her ostrich feather to judge whether they had followed her principles and were therefore just and worthy of continuing to the afterlife. Ma'at was the wife of Thoth, the god of wisdom, and their relationship signified the harmonious interplay between wisdom and justice in the cosmic order. Her relationship with men was very important, and every day she helped her father Ra steer his boat across the sky to make a path for the sun. To love and be loved. It creates life, keeps us alive, makes us tribal. Love can cause us to start wars, resist inequality and oppression, fight for freedom and justice. It can make us crave validation and seek to prosper and provide. It can inspire us to bring happiness or harm to others. It is the heart that makes us move our feet. To love with kindness means to understand ourselves. By getting to know ourselves, perhaps through dance, art, music, maybe by being in nature, being alone, talking, listening, meditating, shouting, laughing, crying, cooking, gardening, however we need to get to know ourselves, to be intimate with our inner selves, so that we then have the ability to be intimate with others. But when love has nowhere to go, or the place where love once was found is no longer there, or where we wished it would be, it can cause deep and profound pain, because we need love to survive. The pain of loss, grief. There is nowhere to go but through it, however long a road it may be, because to shy away from it is to shy away from love. Love never promised to be all pleasure and no pain. That is not it. And it certainly is not life. A life without loss is a life without love. To live a life of love and experience the happiness that that brings is a choice. A choice to be made every day when we get up and go out into the world and we give it. And that is the only way to be sure to love and be loved in return. Thank you for listening to the Balanced Garden podcast, which is written and produced by me, Tiger Lily Raphael. The soundtrack is Yes Mike by Manasseh Meets Praise on Roots Garden Records. For show notes, head to the blogcast at balancedgarden.co.uk. And if you'd like to support the podcast, please rate and review it and share it with your friends. Until next time, live well and enjoy.